The following KOPN podcast is made possible by the generous donations from listeners like you. Please consider a donation to listener-supported community radio, KOPN. You can donate securely online at kopn.org. Thank you. Hi, welcome to Food Sleuth Radio, where we help you think beyond your plate. I'm Melinda Hemelgarn, a registered dietitian and investigative nutritionist on a mission to connect the dots between food, health, and agriculture and find food truth. And today, I'm honored to welcome my guest, Dr. Conrad Chouinier. He is the director of the Office of Analytics and Outreach at the Food and Drug Administration Center for Food Safety and Applied Nutrition. He currently co-leads a core element of FDA's new era of smarter food safety, which is focused on fostering and supporting food safety culture across the food system. He also chairs FDA's Toxic Elements Working Group, which prioritizes the administration's efforts to reduce exposures to lead, arsenic, and other heavy metals from foods to the greatest extent feasible. Dr. Chouinier holds a PhD in agricultural and resource economics from the University of Maryland and a BS degree in chemical engineering from Johns Hopkins University. Welcome, Dr. Chouinier.
Thank you. Happy to be here.
Well, you've been with FDA for a long time, since 2003. But with your background, I am really curious to know what sparked your interest in food issues.
Well, as you mentioned, I was working doing my research in agricultural economics, and I was actually looking at the use of biomass for energy production. So I was interested in the interplay between agriculture and the environment and potential solutions for some of our environmental issues, such as climate change. In the case of working at FDA, thinking about foods and the impact that environment can have on our food supply sparked my interest in the whole idea of how do we reduce our exposures to chemicals and other contaminants that are in our foods due to the contamination from human activities. And so that drew me to this topic.
Well, it's really fascinating, and it is certainly on the minds of many consumers as we see more cases come into the press about contamination. But you recently gave an excellent presentation to registered dietitians on heavy metal contamination. So I thought we'd start our conversation there. And first, let's help us all get an understanding of what do we mean when we talk about heavy metal contamination?
Sure. So heavy metals are naturally occurring elements that are in our environment. They're part of the Earth's crust. So some heavy metals that you're familiar with are lead, and then others that you may be less familiar with might be cadmium. And then there are other elements that are in our environment naturally, such as arsenic, which isn't really a heavy metal, but it gets lumped together with the other heavy metals. And people hear lead, they hear arsenic, and they are known to be poisonous. And although they're present naturally in the environment, they can also be present due to human activities. Humans over time have been very good about spreading these around through our activities, sometimes concentrating them in certain areas, activities such as energy production, mining, manufacturing of batteries, for instance, can cause the concentration of these heavy metals. Other processes include, there was a pesticide that was in use, no longer in use, but it was lead arsenate. And this pesticide included both lead and arsenic. And so there are growing regions that had used this pesticide in the past, and now they're present in the soil. And now when we grow our crops in these soils or in the water that may be contaminated, as those crops grow, they draw those heavy metals into their tissue through their roots or through the air for some of these contaminants or through the water. So that's how those contaminants get into those crops. And then those crops are used to make the foods that we eat.
Right. So I think many of us have heard about some specific foods with regard to contamination. So chocolate, for example, there have been reports and consumer reports in the popular media about lead and cadmium, specifically in chocolate products. I think most of us hear about arsenic when it comes to rice, and we hear about lead most recently as it pertained to cinnamon applesauce pouches, and these were most alarmingly used by young children. And we should talk here about vulnerable populations and why they are so. So what populations is the FDA most concerned with when it comes to heavy metal contamination?
When I answer that question, it might be helpful to provide a little bit more context about the four particular heavy metals. We've mentioned lead, we've mentioned arsenic, we've mentioned cadmium, but another one that we prioritize is mercury. And so we prioritize our efforts on those four because they are highly toxic. That's number one. Number two is they're highly prevalent in the food supply. So although some foods that you've mentioned, like chocolate, come to the attention in the media, these metals are present across a wide variety of foods. And so due to the prevalence in the food supply, as we eat these foods, even if it's just a little bit in a variety of different foods, the total exposure can add up. And so that's a third reason why we prioritize these is for these particular four, the contribution that the diet has to exposure is significant. And so lead, we might get exposed to through the soil or through maybe some water. Cadmium, we might get exposed to if you live in a household where there's tobacco use, for instance. But food is a significant source of exposure. And now that this gets us to your question about children and or the populations. And so another area where we have prioritized our efforts is on those foods that are consumed by babies and young children, because babies and young children are particularly susceptible to exposures to these heavy metals. For instance, for lead, it has a neurodevelopmental impact, and children have certain times in their development when exposure to lead can have negative impacts on development. So they have these windows of susceptibility. So that's why we have prioritized our efforts on those foods that are commonly consumed by babies and young children.
Great. I thought it was interesting that I think we're familiar with the CDC's message, which is there's no safe level of lead in food. And yet, I believe it was in the webinar, there was a mention that if we said no lead ever in any of our food, 70% of foods would be off the market?
Yes. If you were to say, well, and I think that 70% really refers to all four of them. If you were to say, we don't want any lead, we don't want any cadmium, any arsenic, or any mercury found in our foods, we want it all at zero, you would essentially wipe out about 70% of the food market. Now, even the 30% that remains, we can't confidently say that it's zero. Right now, what we're measuring is zero, but we get better and better with our technology at being able to detect really, really low levels. And so as we get better with our technology, what we thought was zero in one day may actually be like, no, actually, there is still lead in there. So that's why our effort we have branded as closer to zero, because we don't think it's possible to actually get to zero. But we do think it's possible to make some gradual steps to reduce the levels across a whole variety of foods over time and move closer to zero over time.
Yeah. And I think that it's wonderful to be giving this kind of information out to consumers. You know, what should we be concerned about and how can we mitigate the effects? So I do want to just touch on that cinnamon applesauce pouch story because it has been consistently in the news. Mothers were alarmed. How did that become known that these cinnamon applesauce pouches were contaminated? And how did FDA get involved?
So the cinnamon in applesauce, well, let's say, first of all, we didn't know it was the cinnamon. We suspected it was the applesauce. And so how did we get involved is we were alerted by the Department of Public Health or public health officials in the state of North Carolina that they had identified a small cluster of children that had elevated blood lead levels. And so when children consume or are exposed to a lot of lead, the lead in their blood can increase. And CDC has guidelines for when the blood lead level gets above a certain reference level, then it's a level that the medical professional should it should alert the medical professional that, hey, there should be some sort of an intervention here. Someone needs to go into the home, needs to figure out where the child has been exposed to lead, what has caused these lead levels to be elevated. So through their work, they identified a common factor in this small group of children that they had all eaten this particular type of applesauce. So this information was provided to FDA, and we proceeded to treat it like an outbreak. Most of the times our outbreaks are due to some bacterial contamination in the food or viral. But in this case, we treated it as a contaminant. It was a chemical contamination in the food. And so we were able to secure product that was consumed by the children, test that product, detected unusually high levels of lead, much higher than we have ever seen in an applesauce product. Now, it's not unusual to detect lead in applesauce, but these levels were about 200 times higher than we would have expected. So this led to an immediate discussion with the firm to initiate a recall of this product and an investigation to understand how did this product get so much lead in it, which eventually brought us to thinking about, well, what about the ingredients that went into the product? Cinnamon was one of the few ingredients. We looked at the cinnamon, went to the cinnamon supplier, and were able to identify that, yes, cinnamon was indeed the reason why the levels were so high in that applesauce.
So you also tested other fruit purees from the same manufacturer, Wanabana, if I'm pronouncing that correctly. And was that finding what led you to zoom in on the cinnamon?
That was one factor that to zoom in on cinnamon. I mean, there's a number of reasons why we thought about cinnamon. So one, we wanted to rule out all different hypotheses. We had a number of hypotheses because in the past we have encountered issues where lead has leached from packaging. So we wanted to ensure that it wasn't the packaging by testing other products in the similar type of packaging. By testing applesauce without the cinnamon versus the applesauce with the cinnamon, that also helped provide evidence that it was likely the cinnamon. Another, from the very beginning, I had, and a few of us had already, we've had past experience with this issue called economic adulteration, particularly in spices. And economically motivated adulteration is when an individual or individuals will deliberately taint a product, like a high value product, such as a spice, with something inferior in order to make a bigger profit. And so you might see it in an oil situation where like a very expensive olive oil might be mixed with a cheaper vegetable oil and then sold at the higher price of olive oil. So that's a economically motivated adulteration. That's not particularly harmful from a health perspective. But then there are other types of economically motivated adulteration, which we suspect this was what happened here, where it can be harmful to the health of the individual. And so there are compounds made of lead, like lead chromate and lead oxide, that are colorful. And those colors are very similar to colors that you see in many spices. And so it's a fairly common or a much more common issue in lower and middle income countries where spices like turmeric can be economically adulterated with a lead compound that is bright in color, like the turmeric, so that they can make more money on the turmeric. So this is an issue that is being targeted by international groups trying to reduce levels of lead exposure on international. We haven't really seen this scale of economically motivated adulteration for spices in the United States until now. We've seen it in smaller scales, like Sometimes we have encountered families that have traveled from abroad and brought spices with them, and that those spices have been adulterated with lead, but not this type of mass production and distribution across the United States.
Yeah, it was really alarming. All right, let me take one break. We're more than halfway through. I want to remind our listeners that if you're just joining us, you're tuned into Food Sleuth Radio. We are joined today by Dr. Conrad Chouanier. He is director of the Office of Analytics and Research at the Food and Drug Administration Center for Food Safety and Applied Nutrition. And he also chairs the FDA's Toxic Elements Working Group. And that group prioritizes the administration's efforts to reduce exposures to lead, arsenic, and other heavy metals from foods to the greatest extent feasible. So what is going to happen now with the producer of this cinnamon that was adulterating it for profit?
Well, I don't think I'm at liberty to talk about the specific case here, but I do want to highlight that there are rules in place that are intended to prevent contamination of the food supply that we expect industry to follow. The rules are generally for the typical type of contamination we see, but those rules could also have been potentially protective in this case. It's hard to tell because this was sort of a, if this was indeed economically motivated, then it's a nefarious activity and we may not have all of the ability to prevent it. But manufacturers, for instance, people that are importing food, it's their responsibility to ensure that the manufacturers of the foods that they are importing are following the adequate preventive controls that are intended to prevent contamination, either chemical contamination or microbial contamination of their product, and ensure that those products are safe before they come into the market. Here domestically in the United States, thinking about our work at trying to reduce levels of lead in food, it is our expectation that manufacturers are aware that lead can be an issue for certain types of foods and that they should be looking at their manufacturing processes. They should be looking at the sources of their ingredients, ensuring that they are not contributing excessively to levels of lead in their foods. And when we have established standards, and which we are in the process of doing, their food should meet those standards. And so one of our follow-up items here is to again reinforce this with industry and the manufacturers of foods about the responsibilities that they have to make sure these types of events don't happen.
Yeah. You know, and I can't help but wonder if this isn't going to create a situation where one bad apple spoils the whole bunch, where consumers become alarmed about toxicants being in cinnamon, and then they just avoid cinnamon altogether.
Yes, that is always a risk. We have seen these types of reactions happen in the past as well. And so we are trying to better understand how we can communicate these risks to consumers without them having unintended behaviors, such as not eating certain foods. The foods that we are generally speaking of are the same types of foods that we want our children to be consuming, that they can, if they consume them, they should have a healthy development. So fruits and vegetables, whole grains, dairy, many of these have contaminants in them, but they also have those essential nutrients because the nutrients that are going into the crops are coming from the soil and the air and the water, just like those contaminants. And so if consumers get the wrong message, they could be avoiding a lot of these healthy foods and therefore actually posing greater risk to their children.
Yeah. And cinnamon itself has so many health benefits that it's nice to know that there's an agency that is helping to keep our cinnamon supply safe. You mentioned lead being one of the typical contaminants that we might find in applesauce. Does that reflect back to lead arsenate used in agricultural production?
It's possible. We haven't quite teased that out, but yes, I mean, certainly lead arsenate was used in orchards. And so some of those orchards are still in existence. The lead and arsenic may still be in the soil. So yes, that is a hypothesis here, which is why we might still be seeing lead in apples and apple juice, for instance. We have a standard that we've proposed for apple juice, both for lead and arsenic. And then, of course, we have some standards that we've proposed for fruit purees that are used in baby foods. So that would include apples. And we see similar levels of contamination, for instance, in other fruits. Pears, for instance, also can have arsenic in them. But we are actually working with USDA, our partners at the Department of Agriculture, to see what do we understand about these issues. And so then how do we then work with growers to identify ways to reduce the levels of these contaminants in the commodities that they're growing?
Let's talk about that. Let's talk about FDA's work with USDA and how growers can work with the agencies to make sure that their food is not going to be recalled, because that's got to be have a huge economic impact on the producers of the food that ends up being contaminated. So it's a win-win for everybody if we can keep these toxic elements out of our food. So tell me about the growers program.
I wouldn't call it a program because it's not a formal, but it is something that we've started with a few sets of growers that have expressed interest in this issue and being proactive on this issue. And we've met with a number of grower groups over time, growers in from the Southeast that might be growing some root vegetables. And we've met with some growers in the West that are growing leafy green vegetables, for instance. And when we have earlier in the past, and we continue to meet with growers of rice. And these are all crops that are generally viewed as nutritious. They are included in the dietary guidelines for Americans. Some of these crops have low levels of a contaminant like lead or cadmium or arsenic. However, they make up a large part of the diet, particularly for younger children. And so the total exposure from those crops can add up. And so we see an opportunity through working with these growers by raising the awareness of the issue and talking with them and talking with researchers and our colleagues at USDA about potential for reducing, even if we reduce the levels just a little bit in their crops, it can add up to a big impact to reduction in exposure. So we've had at least one workshop so far, and we're hopeful to have more where we've brought in growers and academics and researchers, USDA, FDA, to talk about the issue itself, to understand each crop is different. Some crops have a tendency to pick up lead. Some crops have a tendency to pick up cadmium. Others have a tendency to pick up arsenic. Some of it is due to the water in the region that they are being grown. Some of it might be due to the soil in which it's being grown. And so understanding, are there things that we can do to the soil, for instance, that might reduce the uptake, like adding things to the soil? Or are there watering techniques that might reduce the uptake? Is there like a pH that we need to seek in the soil that might help reduce the uptake? And then thinking through, well, what's the economic impact on the grower for these techniques? Because some of the techniques, it may be possible, but it may not be economically feasible. And we don't want to have an unintended effect of making these crops too expensive or driving growers out of business, right? So we're really striving to make these reductions in a sustainable way, because as I've mentioned, these are the nutritious foods we want our children to continue eating.
Right. So you mentioned doing workshops in different regions of the country. I just want to focus. There was a story about rice, for example, where rice produced in certain regions of the country might be more likely to be contaminated with arsenic, say. Are there any recommendations, or do you as an agency look more closely at certain crops being grown in specific regions of the country for specific heavy metals?
Yes, I mean, as you pointed out, rice does have this proclivity for taking up arsenic. It doesn't matter where it's grown, actually, it will pick up arsenic. But certain, we're trying to tease out, well, maybe it's certain varieties, or maybe it is that certain regions have higher levels of arsenic. So there's a lot of work that can be done to try and tease out those factors. But there are other crops that have a tendency to be higher in lead. We've noticed a pattern where root crops, for instance, whether it's potatoes, sweet potatoes, carrots, beets, potentially, I think by nature of how they're grown, they are underground. They do have a tendency to have higher levels of lead. But trying to understand, well, does it matter where they're grown? Does it matter the variety or varietal of those crop? And do those factors influence the lead uptake? That's an area that we're exploring. And then we've noticed that leafy greens can have a tendency to pick up cadmium, no matter where they are grown. But some areas might have higher levels of cadmium in the soil than others. And so there may be some patterns. And so there's a lot of data that needs to be collected to fully understand the issue, and a lot of different factors that need to be considered to understand, well, what is the driving force that we might be able to control to be able to reduce those levels.
Well, if people want to learn more about this, where would you like them to go?
Well, we have a website that actually talks about the work that we're doing under Closer to Zero, and but it's much more about the regulatory side of things. But we are in the process of developing information for consumers that they can use, actionable advice that they can use to help protect their children for these contaminants. And then I think there's a lot of different sources of information out there, and some of it can be just alarmist. And we're hopeful that consumers are not listening too much to the alarmism, because we don't have an issue where all the food is like the applesauce that you mentioned. That is an unusual case. In general, the foods that we eat have low levels of these contaminants, and we would like consumers to continue to eat healthy foods. And in fact, by eating those healthy foods, by following certain recommendations in the Dietary Guidelines for Americans, consumers can actually protect themselves and their children from the impacts of exposure to those contaminants.
That's great. Dr. Chouinard, we are out of time, but I will be sure to provide a link where people can find more information about how to stay safe and to keep up on these kinds of issues. And we'll do a follow-up with one of your colleagues with the FDA also in the future. Is there one last charge you want to give to us?
And one last thing, I'm really thankful that you had me on here today, but I would like to continue to urge people to feed their children healthy, nutritious fruits and vegetables and whole grains and a variety of foods, so to ensure that they have healthy growth.
Thank you. In closing, I want to thank our listeners for joining us. Remind everyone that Food Sleuth Radio is produced by Dan Hemmelgarn for KOPN in Columbia, Missouri. But most of all, I want to thank my guest, Dr. Conrad Chouinard, Director of the Office of Analytics and Outreach at the Food and Drug Administration Center for Food Safety and Applied Nutrition. Thank you so much for your wise insights on this issue. It's been an honor to have you as my guest.
Likewise, thank you.